Wow, okay, you really went all out this time. Articles, quizzes, slides, even pieces of a heavy-duty academic paper. It's like you're building your own big data university.
Looks like someone's serious about getting a handle on all this.
Absolutely. And that's why we're here, to dive deep into this pile and pull out the really useful stuff, right?
That's the plan. We're not just going to define these tools, but really dig into what makes them tick and why you should care about them.
Yeah, because knowing Spark MLib is like 100x faster than MapReduce is cool and all, but what does that actually do for anyone?
Right. We need to connect these powerful tools to real-world problems, the kind of stuff that actually impacts people's lives.
Like, could it help stop a credit card thief in their tracks? Or is that what's making those shopping recommendations so creepily accurate?
We'll see. Connecting the dots between the tech and its real-world impact, that's the key.
Okay, so first up, we've got HDFS, the Hadoop Distributed File System. One article compared it to a super reliable digital filing cabinet, which kind of makes
It's
sense.
a good starting point.
But it's more than just storage, right? It's about keeping your data safe, even when things go wrong.
Exactly. Imagine you're working with a massive data set spread across multiple servers and one of them crashes. With HDFS, your data isn't lost. It's replicated across multiple
Oh,
locations.
so it's like backup copies, but smarter.
Yeah, that's the gist. Slide 2 actually shows this visually, how each block of data is, by default, copied 3 times on different nodes. But that comes with a cost more storage space, 200% overhead to be exact.
So reliability comes at a price, more storage needed. But I guess with big data, that peace of mind is worth it. So we've got the data safe and sound. How do we make sense of it all? That's where MapReduce enters the picture.
Exactly. Think of MapReduce as an army of helpers all processing your data simultaneously. Imagine sorting a giant pile of Legos by color. But you've got a whole team working on it, not just you alone.
I can picture that. And one article, Tools for Big Data Analytics, explains how MapReduce does this, splitting the data into smaller chunks, processing them at the same time, then combining all the results.
Like a well-oiled Lego sorting machine. And slide 4 actually visualizes this. The map phase breaks down the data, processes it in parallel, then the reduce phase brings it all back together, gives you the final output.
So we're talking multiple computers tackling the same problem way faster than just one. Efficiency is key here.
It is. And this idea of parallel computing, you can see it on slide 3, it's fundamental to big data. Traditional methods just wouldn't cut it with these massive data sets.
Right. We've got the foundation, the HDFS, and the processing power of MapReduce, but one article talked about a whole digital zoo of other tools in the Hadoop ecosystem. I have to admit, it's a bit overwhelming.
Yeah, it can be a lot to take in. But don't worry, slide 5 gives us a good roadmap. We've got Hive for querying data with SQL,
Yeah.
Pig, great for transforming data,
Yeah.
and HBase, which is like a real-time database.
Each tool has its own specialty. I also noticed some of your quiz questions zeroed in on tools for machine learning, specifically H2O and Spark MLib. It seems those are especially important for your big data journey.
They are. Machine learning is all about extracting insights, making predictions from data, and these tools let us do that at scale. Really exciting stuff. But before we jump into that, we need to address another challenge. Streaming data.
Streaming data. Okay, now I'm picturing a fire hose blasting out information at warp speed.
Pretty accurate picture. We're not talking about downloading a file. This is a continuous flow. Social media feeds, stock market data, even data from a self-driving car. Every millisecond counts.
How on earth do you even begin to manage that?
Well, that's what makes it so challenging. But there are tools for the job. That tools to process streaming data article mentioned a few. Apache Kafka streams, Apache Flink, Apache Storm. Powerful stuff.
They sound intense. I'm already getting a headache just thinking about it.
They are. But thankfully, slide 7 gives us a nice overview. Kafka Streams is great if you're already using Kafka. It integrates perfectly. Flink is the heavy hitter for complex scenarios where you need to find patterns across a huge, fast-moving stream of data. And Storm? Well, Storm is all about low latency, reacting to changes almost instantly.
So if I'm tracking trending hashtags on Twitter, I'd want to use Storm, right? That real-time response is crucial.
You got it. Choosing the right tool depends on what you need it to do. Simple stream. Low volume. Kafka streams might be perfect. But if you need high performance and complex event processing, Flink is your friend.
Just like you wouldn't use a hammer to screw in a light bulb. So we've got the basics, navigated the Hadoop ecosystem, even touched on streaming data. But those questions about H2O and Spark MLib are still on my mind. You're clearly interested in machine learning.
Absolutely. That's where big data really starts to shine. We're talking about teaching algorithms to find patterns, make predictions. They learn from the data itself.
And H2O is one of the tools that makes that happen. One article called it a super smart lightning fast brain for your computer. That sounds pretty impressive.
It is. H2O is a distributed machine learning platform, which means it can use multiple machines to process data and train models much faster. And get this, it runs entirely in memory, which makes it even faster.
In memory processing. So the data is zipping around inside the computer's RAM, not stuck on a slow hard drive, right?
Precisely. Imagine having all the information you need right at your fingertips instead of having to go search for it in a huge library. That's the power of in-memory processing.
Slide 8 shows how H2O fits into the whole picture. It can work with other tools like Spark and Tableau for visualizations.
Like a team of specialists, each with their own expertise, working together to unlock the secrets within the data.
And H2O has this auto ML feature, which is shown in the H2O compute engine part of the diagram. It's like an AI assistant that finds the best machine learning model for your specific problem.
Exactly. Takes the guesswork out of it, which is great for folks who might not be machine learning gurus.
Democratizing machine learning. I like it. And H2O supports a whole bunch of algorithms too. Deep learning, gradient boosting machines. It's all listed out on slide 9, a whole arsenal of tools.
You said it. It's quite the toolbox.
Now, how does Spark MLlib stack up against H2O? We've got slides for both, so you're obviously considering both options.
We are. Spark MLlib is another powerful machine learning library, but built on top of the Apache Spark ecosystem. And one of its big selling points is speed. Slide 10 claims it's 100x faster than MapReduce.
100 times faster. Wow. So let's say I'm building a system to detect fraudulent credit card transactions in real time. Would that kind of speed actually make a difference?
Absolutely. Every second counts in fraud detection. The faster you can analyze transactions and spot suspicious activity, the better you can protect people and minimize losses. That's where Spark MLlib really shines.
Speed is definitely a big plus for Spark MLlib. What about the types of algorithms it supports? Is it as versatile as H2O?
Slides 9 and 10 actually give us a good side-by-side comparison. Spark MLlib also supports a wide range of algorithms for things like classification, regression, recommendations, clustering, and more. So yeah, it's a very versatile tool.
And both H2O and Spark MLlib support multiple programming languages. So data scientists aren't forced to use a language they're not comfortable with. Flexibility is key.
Absolutely. The bottom line is that both H2O and Spark MLlib are powerful tools for distributed machine learning. And choosing the right one depends on your specific needs and preferences. But your source material doesn't just focus on these specific tools. It delves into the larger research challenges within big data.
Which is where things get even more interesting. You included parts of a pretty intense academic paper called Big Data, State-of-the-Art Concepts, Techniques, Technologies, Modeling Approaches, and Research Challenges. What jumped out at you from that paper?
Well, the paper emphasizes that big data isn't just about size. It's also about complexity, the speed at which data comes in, the variety of data, and how traditional technology just can't keep up. Even defining big data is a challenge in itself.
The paper also points out that the field of big data is constantly evolving. New techniques and technologies are popping up all the time. It feels like we're barely scratching the surface.
Exactly. And the role of data science in extracting value from all this data is critical.
It really feels like we're on the edge of something massive. I mean, we've talked about tools that can process data at insane speeds, predict what's coming next, and handle a constant deluge of information. Where do we even go from here?
That's what's so exciting. We're really just getting started. Think about all the data we generate every single day, from social media posts to online purchases, even data from our phones and all these smart devices. It's a gold mine of potential for solving problems, making better decisions, maybe even understanding ourselves better.
The paper actually talks about that, the potential impact across different industries. Personalized medicine based on your genes, optimizing traffic in cities, using sensors, even using machine learning to discover new drugs and materials. It's mind-blowing.
Yeah, the possibilities seem endless. But there's a flip side too, which the paper acknowledges. As we depend more and more on big data and the algorithms that drive it, we can't forget about how those algorithms are made and the impact their decisions can have.
So it's not just about the how, but also the why and who. Who's building these algorithms? What data are they trained on? Could there be biases hidden within these systems? These are big questions.
Huge questions, and ones we need to be asking all the time. Data scientists, engineers, they have a responsibility to think about the ethics of their work, to make sure the systems they create are fair, transparent, and accountable.
The paper also talks about needing new ways of modeling data to deal with all this complexity. It specifically mentions transforming relational data models into column-oriented models. Can you break that down for me?
Sure. Think about a typical database where everything's in rows and tables. Works fine for a lot of things, but with the sheer volume and variety of big data, it can create a bottleneck. Column-oriented databases, like HBase, they're built for big data. They store data in columns, not rows, which makes certain types of queries much faster.
So it's like instead of organizing a library by author, you organize it by topic. If I want to find all the books on astrophysics, I don't have to go through every single shelf. I just go straight to the astrophysics section.
That's a great way to put it. And the paper gives us a real-world example using a hotel reservation system. Shows how you can take data from a traditional relational database and transform it for HBase. Makes queries about bookings, availability, customer info, all that stuff much more efficient.
It's amazing how the way we organize and store data can make such a huge difference in how effectively we can analyze it. This whole deep dive has been about so much more than just the technical stuff, you know? It's like a journey into a whole world of possibilities, challenges, and responsibilities.
I couldn't agree more. Big data has the potential to completely change how we live, work, and interact with the world. But it's up to all of us, data scientists, engineers, policymakers, even everyday citizens, to make sure this power is used for good, ethically and responsibly.
Well, thank you for being such a fantastic guide through this crazy world. You've given me a lot to think about.
And thank you for the insightful questions and your curiosity. It's been great exploring these ideas with you. And remember, the future of big data is in our hands. So keep asking those tough questions, keep learning, keep pushing the limits of what's possible.
To our listener, thanks for taking this deep dive with us. We hope it sparked your own interest in big data and all the incredible potential it holds. Until next time, keep those data fires burning. And the paper also mentions specific examples, right? Like transforming a hotel reservation system using the TPCH benchmark.
Yeah, they use that to demonstrate how to convert data from a relational database into a format HBase can handle.
Yep.
It's all about making big data manageable, something you can actually work with.
So we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive, from the foundations of big data to the mind-boggling world of machine learning, and even the ethical considerations that come with it. It's a lot to process.
It is. But hopefully, our listener now has a solid grasp of the key tools and techniques for dealing with big data.
Absolutely. They've got the knowledge. But you know what? The paper also had this section on big data challenges, and it got me thinking. We've talked about how to handle big data, but what about the why?
That's the bigger picture, isn't it? Beyond the technical stuff, there are ethical considerations, potential consequences that we need to think about.
Like, what happens when algorithms make decisions that affect people's lives? Who's responsible when things go wrong? These aren't easy questions to answer.
They're not. But they're questions worth wrestling with. As we move forward into this data-driven future, we need to be mindful and keep asking those tough questions.
Exactly. To our listener, thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you found it insightful, maybe even a little bit inspiring. And remember, this is just the beginning. The world of big data is constantly evolving, so keep exploring, keep learning, and who knows what amazing discoveries you might make.